from the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California. I'm Gary Shapiro, and it's time for From the Bookshelf. Tonight, we continue our conversation with Peter Bogdanovich, the director of many great films, including Mask, The Last Picture Show, Paper Moon, What's Up, Doc, and Nickelodeon. Recently, he directed a documentary on Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. He's also an actor who has had a recurring role in The Sopranos and is the author of many books, including his book of interviews with actors entitled Who the Hell's in It?
You said in your book, I'm not sure which book, so forgive me, but you said in one of your books that you think the years 1912 to 1962 were the great years of American movies. It's been almost 50 years since then. Do you think there are any films in the last 50 years that you would consider classics?
Oh, I think there have been many. I mean, I don't know about many, but there have been a number of really good films made since then. I didn't mean to say it ended. It was the end of the whole thing. I think people have made some good films, but as an era, the classic golden era, age of American movies was then. I mean, everything was invented then. Everything was done then. They did things through implication rather than explicitly.
Mm-hmm.
The best comedies were made at that period. You had the most number of stars.
Yeah.
You had great character actors. I mean, it was golden age. I mean, there were crappy movies made at that period, too. And some of the crappy movies were popular and won Oscars, but still... Well, so what else is new?
Well, do you still go to the movies, or do you watch them?
Not much. I go occasionally when I hear something's good, or if I have a friend who made a picture, or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not drawn to see pictures. They're very disappointing.
What's wrong with them?
Well, they don't seem to have much of a personality. A lot of movies are made, they look mechanical. And that's because they are. You know, one of the things, I interviewed 16 directors for that director's book, and then it was Orson Welles and John Ford, that's 18, and then I interviewed a lot of directors whom I didn't record, like Sammy Fuller or Jean Renoir. I mean, I got to know them, and we talked a lot, or Bud Bedeker and so on. And one, the thing that all of them, the one thing that all the directors I interviewed had in common was their pride in doing things for a price and being able to cut corners and shoot just what they needed and only shoot what they needed and not shoot any extraneous stuff. That was what they all had great pride in, that whether it was, you know, Otto Preminger or Hitchcock or Howard Hawks,
mm-hmm.
or Ford or Orson. That's all gone by the by. I mean, everybody shoots everything.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason pictures cost so much a lot of the time is because the director shoots everything in sight and then makes his decision in the cutting room. To me, that's not directing.
It's editing.
It's editing, and it's making the picture in the cutting room. I like to make the picture on the set with the actors. That's when I think you should make the picture.
Well, Bud Bedeker never made a movie that was, you know, longer than 75 minutes. Do you think the movies are too long now?
Well, you know, you see a movie these days and you say, where's Raoul Walsh when we need him? Because Raoul could tell a story, you know, in no time at all, and it would be more interesting.
Yeah. You agree that movies are too long now.
Too long, and there's a kind of MTV editing style that now exists where...
They don't hold a shot for very long?
No, you'd be lucky to see a shot that's held for more than 5-6 seconds. And, somebody noticed the other day, I was talking to somebody, and noticed that there's a lot of sustained scenes in Touch of Evil.
Yeah.
And he said, was that common? I said, well, you know, in the golden age of movies, a lot of directors sustained scenes, particularly in the talking era, because people like Renoir realized that performances are better when they're not interrupted. So there were always long takes in movies. You just don't notice them. And then there was quick cutting also when necessary. But now it's just quick cutting all the time, when it's necessary, when it's not necessary. It's just constant. And that's how movies are made now. Cut, 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 cut. It's Gary, there's nothing easier than to do that. It's the easiest way to make a movie. Shoot every angle you can shoot, and then make the decision in the editing room and glue it all together with music.
Oh, do you think it's that people have shorter attention spans now?
No, it has nothing to do with the audience. It has to do with the decadence of the filmmaking process.
Well, do you think if somebody tried to make Citizen Kane or Touch of Evil with those long scenes, people, the producers would say, you can't have, that's going to put us all to sleep.
I don't know. I've never had any, I mean, I shoot long takes in pictures, and I've never had anybody argue about it. I've done it on TV where they interfere, and they never gave me any trouble about it.
A lot of your recent films have been television films, although you do both theatrical and television films. I don't know, did the Tom Petty movie play in theaters?
What?
Did the Tom Petty movie play in theaters, or was it?
Yeah, briefly, one night only in about 30 markets, and then another night only in about 30 other markets.
How did you feel about that film?
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was really cool. I enjoyed making it, and it took me 2 years.
Yeah.
Part of the reason was because I enjoyed hanging with the band. I just enjoyed doing it. It plays very well on the big screen, that film.
Yeah. I love it. I think it's great. I didn't see it in the theater, but...
Well, it plays great in theaters, but it plays fine on TV, too. It's...
I have a big TV.
Yeah. It's great sound.
Yeah. What are you working on now? You have a film you're in production on now?
Not in production, but we're veering in that direction with a couple of films. I have about 4 films that we're sort of in various stages of preparation on. I don't know which one will go first.
Yeah.
I've got a kind of a modern Western, and I've got an Alzheimer's love story, and I've got a ghost picture, and I've got a screwball comedy. They're all sort of on the burner.
And are these pictures, do you feel that these are movies that you've generated, or they're movies that have come to you, or what?
The first two I mentioned, the love story and the kind of modern Western, came to me, and I rewrote them. And... The other two are self-generated.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about a film of yours that I like a lot, which was The Cat's Meow.
Yeah.
Were you happy with that film?
Yeah, I thought it came out well.
That film and also the movie you made for TV about Natalie Wood both have deaths that were mysterious or unexplained, but you take a specific point of view in both films. How'd you decide to do that? Especially the one with Thomas Ince, where it's certainly been up in the air for, 50 years or something?
Well, if you're going to tell a story like that, if you're going to tell it at all, you better tell them what happened, or at least show them a version of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just say, well, we don't know what happened. Then don't make the movie. I mean, I think you have to sort of take a point of view.
And so do you think that your point of view in The Cat's Meow is accurate?
Well, it seemed to make sense. You know, there's no way to know. We'll never know the truth, but it seemed to make sense with what everybody, with all the testimony that was available.
Did you ever discuss that with any of the principals?
No, they're all gone.
Right, but you know, you've met some of them. No, did you ever meet Chaplin?
Just Chaplin, but I mean, he was, by the time I met Charlie, he wasn't in really good shape. He didn't remember much.
Yeah.
He never would have talked about that incident anyway. He claimed he wasn't even on the ship.
Huh. And you have an affection for that era. Nickelodeon is another one of your films that I love that, I don't know, might not have been a big hit, but it's one of my favorites. Do you like silent films? Do you still
see them? I like silent films. You know, not all silent films. Most of them were junk, but there was a lot of good ones. I love it's a whole different thing than talking pictures, but the great moments, film directors who began in the silent era then subsequently did sound pictures, their greatest moments are usually silent in the pictures. It's very interesting.
In other words, they make talking pictures, but they have silent sequences in them.
Yeah, silent sequences that are the most memorable. Because it is, after all, a visual medium, which we've forgotten now. By visual medium now, we mean just a lot of quick cutting. But Nickelodeon, by the way, is coming out on DVD for the first time in America on the 21st with a box set with The Last Picture Show.
Oh, fantastic.
And the I wasn't as keen on Nickelodeon, particularly because there was some stuff cut out and I wanted it to be in black and white. So the new set, the new edition includes the released version in color and a black and white version that the director wanted.
Oh, fantastic. So we'll see a little bit closer to the version that you wanted?
Yeah, it was compromised a bit in casting, so it'll never be what I wanted, but it's much closer in the black and white.
Who did you want? Can you say who you wanted?
Well, I wanted a younger cast. I wanted to use Jeff Bridges and John Ritter.
Mm.
Jeff to play the Burt Reynolds part and John Ritter to play the Ryan O'Neill part.
So Burt Reynolds was imposed on you?
No, I picked him because I had to choose a star.
Yeah.
So I picked two stars that I'd worked with.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
What about St. Jack? Any thoughts about that film?
St. Jack came out the way I wanted it to. That was one of my better pictures, I think. I'm very pleased with that film. It sort of screwed up my life there for a while.
Why did it screw
well,
it,
you know, there are life-altering movies, and that was one of them. Oh, just my relationship with Sybil fell apart. I was gone for 6 months in Singapore and having a great time.
Uh-huh.
And
some great acting.
There's a ringing going on. Do you hear it?
No, I don't.
Good.
There was some great acting in St. Jack.
Yeah, Ben Gazzara was amazing, and so was Denham Elliott. They were both great. They were great together. Two really, 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 really good actors, as good as they get.
I think it's the best thing that Ben Gazzara did in his career so far.
He thinks so. And, it's his favorite film. We loved doing it together. We both had a great time. And it was really a collaboration. I mean, I wrote it for... I wanted to do it with Benny, and when I wrote the script, it was for him, just like They All Laughed was. I think really St. Jack and They All Laughed was a high point from real high point for me. Those two pictures, that point, that place in my career was very, very strong. Pinnacle.
Well, can you explain why those films aren't as well remembered or received at the time?
Well, they weren't really released very well. I mean, St. Jack was released by Roger Corman and sort of not very aggressively, and he didn't spend any money. It got good reviews.
Mm-hmm.
By and large, I mean, the Times didn't get it, but Vincent Canby saw he was drunk and slept through the whole picture. When they woke him up to tell him it was over, he said, "Oh, it's like an Alan Ladd movie." I mean, he just didn't know what he was doing.
Uh-huh.
But Jack Kroll and Newsweek got it, and it got some good reviews. And I think it's one of my best pictures. A lot of filmmakers like it.
And They All Laughed.
Like Wes Anderson and Quentin Tarantino. I mean, they really dig it.
Oh yeah, I wanted to ask you about Tarantino. He gives you sort of special thanks in Kill Bill, I think it is.
Yeah, I can tell you about that. They All Laughed. That's my favorite picture of all the films I've ever made.
Why?
Well, if you said to me, of all the movies you've made, which one is the most like you? Which one is the most personal? I'd say They All Laughed. It deals with serious subject lightly. It has a combination of comedy and drama. It's elegiac without playing the violins too loud. It's set in New York, which is my hometown. I loved the actresses in it, all of them. And the actors. I mean, John Ritter was one of my favorite people in the world.
Mm-hmm. Audrey Hepburn is great, isn't it?
And Audrey's wonderful. And Dorothy was... I was in love with Dorothy, and... It was a great period.
That's a wonderful film. So, Tarantino, yeah, he gives you special thanks. What did you do to earn your his thanks?
Oh, you know, Quentin is such a movie buff. He noticed that in my films, if there's a, generally speaking, if there's a news broadcast or a disc jockey, that it's me doing it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Can you put it on hold and hold it a second?
You bet. Sure.
That's okay. It gave me an ear-piercingly loud...
Sorry, I don't know why I did that.
That's perfectly all right.
Covered?
Yeah, we're fine. I'm good. You're all right?
Yeah.
Okay. You were telling me, yes, in many of your films, you're the disc jockey, the voice of the disc jockey.
Indeed, I'm either the disc jockey or the newscaster in Picture Show and Paper Moon and a few other pictures. So Quentin realized that. And he, when he was doing Kill Bill, he used some of my voice as a disc jockey in some of the scenes.
Did he get you to record it, or he stole
he
it from
you? He did it. He used it from the movie originally, and then he called me and said, I want to get it clean. Can you come in and do it? I said, sure. I thought it was funny, so I came in and did it. And he directed me for an hour or so and enjoyed himself, and we had fun. We're friends anyway, and then he unnecessarily gave me credit, which was really I just did it as a joke, kind of.
Do you enjoy acting?
Oh yeah, acting's fun.
Well, you recently did The Sopranos. That was probably your most visible part in a long time.
Yeah, well, that was the great, amazing role that I had, an amazing part of an amazing series. That was just phenomenal.
You were great in it.
Thank you. I enjoyed doing it. It was a wonderful part. He was so square and sort of essentially decent, and then at the end he does that strange thing and gives out the information to who she's with. It was interesting.
Yeah. And you were in, I don't know, you did 10 or 11 episodes of it?
I don't know. I never counted. I think it was more like 15.
Mm-hmm. And would you do that again, a recurring role in a series?
Oh, yes, in a heartbeat.
You enjoyed that. You were in a film that Orson Welles directed, yeah?
I was in the legendary The Other Side of the Wind.
Will we ever see that movie?
Well, Gary, I've been working on it for years.
Where is it?
Sitting in a vault in Paris and in a vault in L.A.
Why can't we?
What's it about, money? We've been negotiating now for almost a decade with Showtime, and they want to do it. And I think they will do it, and it's just not their fault. It's just, as usual with Orson, legalities, various people who own bits and pieces, or more than bits and pieces. It's just a mess.
Will you be the director who puts it together?
Well, I'm going to put it together because Orson asked me to. He said to me in, I don't know what year, 74, 75, somewhere in there, he turned to me at lunch one day and said, if anything ever happens to me, I want you to promise me you'll finish The Other Side of the Wind. And I said, my God, Orson, why would you say such a thing? Nothing's going to happen to you. I know nothing's going to happen to me. But if it does, I want you to promise me you'll finish it. So I reluctantly said, well, yeah, okay, sure, but nothing's going to happen to you. Well, 10 years later, he died.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been over 20 years since he died.
And we're still waiting for it. Has all the photography been done on it?
Basically, he shot everything, except some trick shots that he left to be done, and those could still be done. And they're not elaborate, and since the computer age, they're basically simple.
You could even, you know, have actors who are no longer alive in it.
No, right? you don't need actors. He finished all the actors.
John Huston is in it. You're in it.
John Huston has the lead.
Who else is in it?
I have the second lead, second male lead.
Huh.
Oh God, everybody was in it.
So if the movie were released now, you could win an Oscar for a movie that you shot 30 years ago.
Good, so could Orson, but who knows. Who was in it? Mercedes McCambridge and Pat O'Brien and Edmund O'Brien and Lily Palmer, John Carroll, Paul Stewart, Tony O'Selward, Paul Mazursky, Dennis Hopper, Henry Jaglom. Everybody in Hollywood was in it.
Do you know all those people? Are you friends with all those
Susie
people?
Susie Strasberg had a big part.
Which of the directors, you know, your contemporaries, are you friendly with? And
I'm sort of friendly with, you mean the kids?
Or yeah.
My contemporaries. Not that friendly with any of my contemporaries, but the younger people, I'm quite friendly with Wes Anderson and Noah Baumbach. They both call me, I allow them to call me Pop. And I call them son.
But you're the kid, aren't you?
Huh?
Aren't you the kid, director?
Yeah, I was the kid once. And Quentin.
Uh-huh.
Those three are quite friendly. And I know others. Rick Linklater is a friend and so on, but I don't hang with him much.
Do you think you have masterworks yet to make?
Well, that's interesting. I have a picture I've been working on honing. I don't know how many years it's been. I suppose it's been about 29 years that I first had the idea about 28, 29 years ago. And I worked on it for about 13 years without realizing I didn't have a third act.
Hmm.
And then I realized I didn't have a third act, so I spent another few years trying to figure out how to make it work. This is all between other projects. And I had two different titles, and let me say, it started out as about a director who has had three wives and three daughters, and it all played in Paris. Now it's about a director who had six wives and six daughters and plays in five countries, all in about 4 days.
Huh.
It's the best thing I ever conceived. It's called Wait For Me.
Wait For Me. Mm-hmm. And when? How much longer do we have to wait for Wait
Well,
For
Me? Well, I've got somebody who's very interested in putting it together with me. It just happened the last few days, so hopefully soon. It's a magnum opus. It's not an easy picture to make. It's got a lot of special effects. It's not like anything I've ever done. It's a fantasy. It's got six ghosts in it, and it's set in Rome, Prague, Vienna, Budapest, and Salzburg.
Do you have a cast in mind?
It's a huge cast. That's the problem.
Uh-huh.
Because there are six wives and six daughters, and you meet them all, and then there's six friends and assorted other people. So there's a lot of people in it.
But that's the kind of thing you would want to use stars for, right? Because you'd want to be able to keep them straight.
Well, that's exactly right, Gary. That is the plan, is to use name actors for all the leading roles.
Yeah.
But I haven't zeroed in on who we... It was originally written, but he died before I could get to a real good draft. It was originally written with John Cassavetes in mind, but mm-hmm. And John loved the idea and kept telling me to do it, and I said, well, I haven't got it right yet.
I'm available, by the way.
Okay. Good to know.
Well, I'm looking forward to that picture.
Me too.
What will be the next thing that will have your name on it that we'll see?
Gary, if I knew that, I'd be clairvoyant. I don't know, but it'll be probably one of the four I mentioned, or it might be something I don't even know about.
That hasn't come your way.
That's what show business is like. But there are four scripts that are at the moment have my attention. One is a Western, which is called One Lucky Moon, and then there's a kind of a love story, a tragic love story called I'll Remember April.
Have you actually ever done a Western before?
No, except for Lonesome Dove, which I did in my head.
Mm-hmm.
But it was called Streets of Laredo. And then there's a comedy, a kind of real wild screwball comedy set in New York called Squirrels to the Nuts, which is I love, and I'll hopefully do that. And Wait For Me.
Wait For Me. That's going to be the masterpiece that you've...
Well, I don't know about masterpiece, but it's an important picture for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of your favorite directors worked, you know, until they were old men.
Practically dead.
Yeah. Do you plan on doing the same?
Well, I think people are older and younger today at the same time. I think, you know, I think when John Ford was my age, he was a pretty old man.
Right. But people live longer now.
Well, also they take better care of themselves because they know that cigarettes and cigars kill you.
You're very fit. I mean, as opposed to your Orson Welles, you know.
Yeah, well, you know.
He was like seven times your size.
Well, my mentors are like Orson or Hitch or Ford. They didn't take very good care of themselves.
Well, thank you so much for spending some time with us, Peter Bogdanovich. It's really an honor, a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks, Gary. It's nice to be on.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for this week's edition of From the Bookshelf. Hope you enjoyed the show. I'll be back again next week with another one. And in the meantime, check out our podcast page at KUSP.org. As always, thanks go to our From the Bookshelf production staff, Miss Breanne Beal. Thanks, Breanne. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for listening.